Welcome to the Junior Golf Blueprint, episode 29, presented by Matt Walter, PGA Teacher Professional. Today's episode, I'm going to cover 12 reasons why serious golfers fail to reach their full potential. This is an article I found in Golf WRX, courtesy of a client of mine who passed it along my way, and it was a fantastic read. And the gentleman who wrote this article has absolutely hit the nail on the head in every aspect of it, John Haim. It's serious business, and if you have a serious junior golfer who is struggling to reach their full potential, or you don't think they're hitting their full potential, these are 12 great points to walk through with them and helping them reach the potential that they want to achieve, but also to realize where they may be giving themselves too hard of a time on themselves as a golfer. Okay, so let's crack right into the 12 points this article is making and how it can help your junior golfer, or even you, help your junior golfer learn some things that they may be overlooking. And so I'm going to highlight the main bullet points with my own twist on it, but at least now I'll have an idea of what you may be missing or what you may need to implement. So, number one, there's no real plan and steps to achieve targets. So, you've heard me preach about my monthly plans. This is where this all came from. You know, in my monthly programs, we're doing full swing one-on-ones, group practices from inside 100 yards, workouts, playing lessons. That's all happening within 1 month. And, you know, it's helping us to achieve short-term goals so that we can achieve our long-term goals. And that's a big thing that I think kids miss, is that we're not setting targets for ourselves to achieve on a short-term and long-term basis. And even when I ask my kids, you know, what's the plan? What are we trying to achieve here? Why are you here today? They may say things, but I don't know if they really mean it. And when you write it down, you put some ownership to it, and you staple it above your bed, and you look at it every morning, now it's starting to give you a little bit of something that's proving your worth, right? So the big things to take away from bullet one is create that short-term plan. You heard me in my previous podcast about talking about creating a monthly outline. Make your monthly goal. Find a monthly goal. And then your long-term plan. What are you going to achieve for this year? By the end of middle school, by the end of high school, by the end of college, what's your goals? Write it down. Strive every day to achieve it. Bullet two, number two, there's not enough focus on the object of the game. One of the first questions I ask kids, what wins a golf tournament? And it's hilarious the responses I get, because a lot of them are missing the mark. You know, they'll say focus, drive, up and down, things like that. How to say the lowest score. The lowest score wins trophies. There's no best swing award. There's no most up and downs award. The only award you can get is the trophy for the lowest score. So do whatever you have to do to shoot the lowest score. Number three, there's not enough pressure in practice. Preaching to this one. That's why I developed the group practices. We have multiple kids, between up to eight kids, competing against each other in competition and short game goals, you know, short game practices, games, things like that, that are putting some pressure on the kids to get, you know, better and compete against each other. And we do the same thing when we do playing lessons. I'll stack three or four kids up in a playing lesson and play a match. The biggest problem we have in golf is that we don't always practice on the field we play on. So we have this separation of what needs to happen versus what is going to happen. And so we get all our needs done on the driving range, and then we're not faced with what's going to happen on the golf course yet. And we get stuck in this loophole of bewilderment when we get a shot that we've never seen, because you can't practice a punch out of 6 inches of rough on a practice tee. Bullet four, we take too much time practicing the full swing. This is the biggest misconception that people view us golf coaches is that we're going to go in there, clean your swing up, and then you're going to go shoot 62. You can't shoot even par with a perfect golf swing or hitting the ball perfect. One, nobody's hit the ball perfect ever in the history of the game. So if you accomplish that feat, call me. Two, 100 yards and in is where you're going to make the most back. So I played a playing lesson last night with one of my kids. He's a beginner, played his first 9 holes in a long time. And we set a Luke par. Luke par was double bogey golf. So he had to make a double bogey on every hole, and it was his par, just to have some kind of basis. And then as he gets better, we're going to set it to bogey golf, and then we're going to set it to every other hole of bogey golf, and then it's par golf. And setting a benchmark. So, that being said, we look back at his round, and he shot 4 over Luke par. And I asked him, how many 3-putts did he have? And he counted 4. I said, Luke, if we had no 3-putts, we would have shot even Luke par. And the light bulb goes off that putting actually does matter at that point, and not just hitting the golf ball. Number 5, there's an obsession with the look of the golf swing. You've heard me say this again over and over, and I'll say it one more time. I'm a part of a group of instructors who screen our players for structural integrity and build a golf swing around that structure. I do not build the same golf swing for every player. You will look down a driving range full of people I've worked with, and you will not be able to tell that's a Matt Walter system. Because I don't build golf swings the same for every person. You can't lump me in that bracket. And so I kind of pride myself that you can look down a range and you won't be able to tell who I'm working with because they're all working on different stuff. But to that point, the look doesn't matter. I still do have a pretty good looking golf swing that doesn't always produce. I'm not playing tour golf, so clearly a good looking golf swing doesn't mean you're going to play on the PGA Tour. So go back to bullet number two. Shoot the lowest score. Bullet number 6, no structure with the driver. So the driver is the thing that's going to set the tone for the hole, right? On any par 4, par 5, that's with serious length, we're going to have to hit the big dog, and we're going to have to hit it in play. So he talks about picking a shape and eliminating one side of the golf course. I am more on the side of find your shotgun pattern and aim accordingly to your shotgun pattern. If your shotgun pattern where the 80-90% of your shots end up 5 yards left of the target line, accommodate that. Get on the left side of the tee box, aim up the right side of the fairway, and anticipate 90-80% of your shots are going to land left. You're still going to hit a couple to the right, but it may not be far enough right to put you out of play. So find a target line on the driving range, see where the ball is landing, and then aim according to that grouping, and that will help get you the ball to stay in play more. My big 3 for shooting under 85 is no lost balls or obstructed tee shots. That's number 1. Don't have to hit, don't re-tee, don't lose a ball, and don't have to punch out is bullet number 1. The other 2 are get your first wedge on within 15 feet and no 3-putts. Those are the keys. But going back to the no structure with the driver bullet, you can only hit so many fairways, but as long as you're not impeding yourself off the tee box where your missed fairways are just in the rough, you'll start shooting lower scores. Okay, bullet number 7. This is my favorite. Parents, listen to this, please. Heed my words. Number 7, expectations that they will hit the ball well every day. You will not do that. The problem we face as a human being is that feel will change. We will always have a different feel every day that we wake up. So what feels right today will not feel right tomorrow for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. You may wake up different. You may wake up and your back hurts, and that's going to affect your golf swing. Harder for that to be a case for a 12-year-old, but us older people, we get it. But think about this. Okay. The PGA Tour, you know, the average driving accuracy percentage is only at 60%, and they only average 12 greens around. So there, you can't be perfect. Again, this goes back to this. There's no perfect. You're not going to hit the ball well every day. But go back to bullet number two. Find a way to get the ball in the hole faster. Get the ball in the hole faster, even on the days you can't hit it well. You heard Jordan Spieth talk about that, where he played in a tour event as a youngster and realized that even though he didn't have his best day, he knew he could still compete. That's what matters. Number eight, trying to be too robotic and precise in putting. Putting is the feel of all feels. If you look back at how the style of putting was in the 60s and 70s, it would be considered atrocious in today's age with these perfect postures we have. When it comes to putting, I am probably the least technical person you'll meet out there, because the vast majority of where that ball is going to go is off of where that putter face is pointed. Path plays almost no bearing on it, up to about 15 feet. So you, as long as that putter face is pointed where you want that ball to go, and you keep it there through impact, that ball will go on that line. I mean, it's going to go wherever that face is pointed. So get the face pointed to the target, and whatever the feel is, do it. But at the end of the day, speed and line are what's more important. That's the two variables. Just make the ball go in the hole. So we do drills working on starting lines, and we do drills working on speed. And the speed drills, I'm not too concerned about where the ball ends up, left or right. And on starting lines, I'm not too worried about how far the ball rolls out. So we're learning different elements so that we can combine them when it matters the most. Bullet nine, no process for assessment and reflection. So this goes back into the game plan. Number one, creating an active plan. When we work on our monthly plans, we're trying to pick apart the pieces that we have to improve. Now, you may have one skill set that you're exceptional at. You may be the best driver of the golf ball. Don't practice everything else so much that you are no longer the best driver of the golf ball. You still have to practice your driver or putting or whatever your skill set is that you excel at. But reflect on your rounds. Find the area that needs the most improvement. Are you hitting fairways but not hitting greens? Are you making poor decisions as far as distance? Do you not know how far your clubs are going? Do you need to relearn how far your clubs are going? Or do you need to work on hitting less than full shots because you find yourself with between yardages and you can't hit the tweener yardage shots? All these are assessments that have to take place post-round so that you can practice them and improve them. But then I've also talked about course prep for tournaments too, where you go out and play a golf course for your practice round and know that you're going to hit a lot of long irons on par threes. So you better prepare and hit those long irons so you're ready for it, so you don't go play that tournament and then look back and said, I should have practiced hitting more 4 and 5 irons. Bullet 10, getting in their own way. The inner demon, the voice inside our head that tells us to quit when we shouldn't quit, or the voice inside our head that gives us the blame game, or the emotional responses to our shots. You've heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. I'll probably keep saying it as long as I do this podcast. We have to be able to remove the emotional response from our shots, albeit good or bad. If we are emotionally attached to what happens and we keep that emotional attachment to the shot more than 5 steps after we walked away from where we hit it, you will suffer. Good and bad shots will still have the same effect. If you ride the emotional high from a good shot, it will be just as detrimental as riding an emotional low from a bad shot, because you get too jacked up on the good shots. You're going to start flying greens. You're going to start overworking the golf ball, right? You're going to start swinging faster, so you're going to have your timing issue go off. You have to be able to control your emotions, which then control your response to the shot that you just hit. Number 11, a focus on the negative before the positive. This is where for an example, if you look down the fairway and all you see is the hazard to your right, the out of bounds to your left, your brain is already drawn to the wrong parts of the hole. And you, by the time you tell yourself you're going to hit down the fairway, you already know that the out of bounds and the hazard are in your way. The thing we have to be able to do, and the best way I've associated this, is if you're driving down the highway, you have to ignore the billboards, right? And younger kids don't get this. Kids that are just learning to drive in college, kids are starting to understand that you can be cruising down the highway and you may ignore six billboards in a row, but then one might stand out to you. This is just like hitting tee shots. You may hit six or seven tee shots and you're flying through the golf course, not unaware of the hazards and the out of bounds, but then all of a sudden you get to one hole and bam, that hazard really just stood out to you all of a sudden. It's going to jar you a little bit and it's going to distract you from what you're trying to do. In this case, driving on the road or driving your tee shot. So you have to be able to stay focused on your lanes, or in this case, our fairway, and use that mentality where you don't know how many miles you just drove because you're so zoned out on what you're doing in front of you that you're with your driving that you don't realize you just drove 5 miles. And in our case, that's an 18-hole round of golf. And you're just so vigilant on being aware of your lanes that you ignore all the billboards on the side of the road. Number 12. I've already said it by accident. The blame game. Oh my goodness, I love this one. Blaming the superintendent, blaming the weather, blaming the tournament director, blaming, you know, the other competitors, spectators, complaining about whatever it is. Everybody's going to play the same golf course that day. So you can't dish out things that may have been unfair to you. Everybody's going to face that at some point during their round. So what you have to be able to do is accept responsibility for your own game and ignore ignore the mistakes or ignore the things that you want to put on other people because you're not willing to accept your faults. Take ownership of it, move through it, become a better golfer for it. Okay? Own your game, own your life, and you will be much happier for it too because you'll grow as a human being. So don't play the blame game. Before we go, I'm going to leave you with one good quote. It's about adversity by C.S. Lewis. And it's also about hardship. It goes, "Hardships often prepare ordinary people for an extraordinary destination." And for me, when I read that, ordinary and extraordinary, there was a quote when I was in middle school in the hallway stairs by the cafeteria. And on that banner, it read, "The difference between ordinary and extraordinary is that little extra." And I personally think that, you know, we are always going to be faced with hardships, but it's how we respond to that hardship that separates us from an ordinary person and an extraordinary person. And for me, in the way I think that, you know, it goes back to kind of that ownership of the hardship. When things get tough, how do you respond and what can I do to be a little bit better than the next guy or to give a little bit extra than the next guy so that I can be extraordinary? And when you're out playing a round of golf, this can definitely come up where you're going to be faced with hardships in a round of golf. It's not going to be easy. You might only have a couple rounds in your life where it felt easy. So how do you prepare for those hardships so that you can find the extraordinary destination and be extraordinary? With that, I'm going to leave you for the weekend. I got a great podcast coming up next week. I'm going to interview the U.S. Kids Golf Tournament Director. We're going to talk about all the initiatives we're doing with U.S. Kids Golf and all the tournaments we're being played around the country. It'll be a great podcast, a lot of fun. I've been working with them for 3 years now, and I've absolutely had a blast doing it. So with that, I'll leave you. I hope you have some warm weather and you're able to go out and practice and play this weekend.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.